Ladies and gentlemen, this is Das Hobby, Germany's number one trading card show. And here are your hosts with the perfect podcast faces, Marcus and Dennis.
Yes, Germany presents the hobby more and more at the international market. We are getting Beckett and PSA. And today, our next special guest from the home of the hobby, from the USA. But before we welcome and introduce our guest, before you have to make yourself comfortable with my English and listen to the real native speaker, Dennis, what's up?
Native speaker? That's news to me. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you so much. A very international show today, actually. I'm still in South Africa, but I'm looking forward to have a wonderful conversation about the hobby. Good to see you again, Marcus. We had a little break since last time we recorded. You look as good as always.
So 1 year older, actually, since last time we see us. Yeah.
True, true. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, thank you.
Interestingly, how you slipped that information in to get more congratulations. Well done, well done.
Yeah, great. You're still a long time now in South Africa, right?
Yes, the whole month of January I'm here. I have to work from here too, but the good thing is only 1 hour time difference to Germany, which is pretty amazing. Just imagining it like Frankfurt, just with sun.
Yes, nice. Great. A bit more time difference is at our guest today. He's very active for our hobby and a lot of projects, which I think we will get very soon more about that. Welcome, Danny, to our podcast.
Guten Tag from Virginia. I took German when I was in K-12 for a little bit, but I did want to say, and I did have to look this up. I knew Geburtstag's birthday, but I forgot how to say happy birthday. But to Marcus, alles Gute zum Geburtstag.
Ah, that is beautiful.
Very good. Deepel was helping, huh? A bit. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you for dealing with our complicated language, and sorry for that.
Yeah. No, not at all. And you said like the home of the hobby, man. You know, I think about how international, like, you know, this the Michael Rubin, he wants to 10x the hobby. That I feel like the growth opportunities really are international. I mean, you see it with the PSA and Beckett that just came out right before we started recording. But I mean, that's where the growth is. And you know, before we start, I'm sorry, I had this podcast host. Pardon me, which we'll talk about, but I really did want to give a shout out. I don't know if they probably do listen, because you said this is the biggest hobby podcast in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. But Rick Man Rips, Skybox Autographs Collector, Jest, Torsten, NBA Pape, maybe shout out to all of them. Even more, you know, there's Shaq Collector DE, like on Instagram, like I love my international audience. I think there's some other content creators who are just there's so much fixation on these America centric in the hobby, but there's so much more out there. And I've mailed out, you know, I've done deals with people in Germany, and I love my German hobby friends.
Great. A lot of them, what you mentioned now, actually, they were also on our podcast as a guest. Rickman was here. Shaq Collector was here. So
Rickman even co-hosted once. We once had a summer break and we asked other people to host the show for us. Mm-hmm. And Rickman and Dennis the Ripper, they did a show together.
Oh, right. Dennis the Ripper. So you're not Dennis the Ripper. That's two different Dennis.
I'm the good-looking Dennis. I'm the good-looking Dennis. No, the Ripper is, oh gosh, don't come with that guy. No, good friend of the show. Good friend of the show. Wonderful.
I know
person.
Marcus. Marcus sent me a link to the English version of Das Hobby, and I have listened to some of those episodes. I did not listen to the German ones. I will admit that's too. You know, your English is much better than my German. I will say that. So, but no, you've had some great guests on this podcast. So thank you. I mean, I just feel so honored and esteemed to be part of this, because you guys have such a great presence.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're very happy that you also be a guest and take your time for our podcast, because, as I said, you have a lot of stuff. What are you doing in the hobby? But maybe can you just introduce yourself?
Yeah,
Where you're from, what you're doing in the hobby, and how do you get to the hobby, actually?
You know, so in my area of the country, which is in the Mid-Atlantic, so it's called the DMV. I mean, that's like a nickname for it. That stands not for Department of Motor Vehicles, which I know that's also DMV, but this is for the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. And it's really like DC's in the middle. There's Southern Maryland, and then there's Northern Virginia. So I'm in the Northern Virginia area. I live in Alexandria. And so we have a great kart scene. We almost, I think literally every single weekend of the entire calendar year, we have a kart show in some capacity, whether it's small or regional, or, you know, like we just have like so many active participants, dealers, and these shows are like, I mean, they weren't packed. Like maybe they're busier now, but I mean, when I came back into the hobby, 2.5 years ago, like when I turned 40, it was kind of still, the scene was growing, but it was still like big. I mean, it, you know, people liked it. It's just that now there's such a desire, and so many more people are more educated that they want to be vendors. They want to, you know, transact more instead of just collect. So, I loved the hobby since a little kid. I grew up in New York, in Queens, New York City, in the 90s. So I'm a 90s basketball guy. That's my main lane of collecting. I have deviated a lot from that because there's so many awesome cards and so many different sports and non-sports. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, like many kids, it didn't matter that I lived in New York and I was supposed to root for the Knicks. I love the Jordan Bulls. Mm-hmm. And so he's very expensive to collect now for sure. But he is, you know, he like that's what really spurred things on, right? He's like the what Wemby is now, I guess. But I came, you know, I left the hobby in like the late 90s for like, you know, if anyone young is listening to this, it is okay to leave the hobby for school or for chasing, you know, I mean, you can say girls and boys, but you know, like, you know what I mean? Like you can, you know, chase relationships, you know, fall in love, do all that. I came back into the hobby after, like, when I got my first like adult paycheck, and then I came back and I started spending a little bit more money here and there. And then I stopped again when I, you know, started a young family. And then I came back, a little bit after the pandemic, but like a neighbor friend of mine was like, hey, his name, shout out to Rated Rabbi. He's a neighbor of mine in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And that's his Instagram handle, but he, was like, hey, you know, do you have old cards in your attic and all the, you know, it's the card scene is booming. And we kind of talked about it. And then, so I kind of got back into it that way. And I mean, it's just, I fell back in love with it. But I, you know, back in the 90s and 2000s and 2010s, yes, there like 2000 and 2010s. Yes, there was social media and Facebook, but nothing like today, right? Just nothing like today.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dennis, start.
Yeah. So my question would be, so it's one thing to collect, and you said it earlier that these days people, I think because there are examples out there, okay, you can do a podcast and you can do breaks and you can do this, that. So people want to imitate that, but it looks like you do a lot of these things. So were you always that active in content creating and being outgoing?
I will tell you, before the hobby, I had like no social media presence, like private Facebook profile. No, I didn't come from cooking, sneakers, music. I didn't do any of that stuff. This is like when I started my Instagram account for cards, it was just for cards. Mm-hmm. It started with literally just taking pictures of cards on the floor. And, you know, just I slowly saw the content out there and I was like, hey, maybe I can do that. And as we all know, like the barrier to entry for all of these things, whether it's podcast, breaking, a show vendor, like it's so, there's no barrier to entry. It's like, if you have a phone, if you have a podcast mic, you don't even need a podcast mic, right? You just have your phone, you can make content. Mm. So, the barrier to entry is so low, which means that there's definitely like a lot of entrance, and there's a lot of maybe also some people do things shady, especially on the breaking side, but that's why the people who do it really well can stand out, I think. And, you know, you just have to keep building that trust and that, you know, just, you know, be like yourself, I think.
True. Yeah, I think the barrier is not the doing part, but also to have ideas or be open to do that, to stand in front of a camera or of in front of the microphone to say, yeah, I'm doing this, and to have ideas. And we of course link your Instagram account and your other accounts, there's very creative, so it's very funny sometimes. So it's news, and you talk about the hobby. So how does this come to this where your Instagram is today?
Right. So I feel like if you are on hobby Instagram, you may have seen my stuff. You may have, you know, liked it or just passed by your feed and you didn't like it and you can move on. I feel like with YouTube, I'm still growing. So I do have a YouTube channel that's same Denny_cards. I have a podcast, The Card Diary by Hobby S. Thompson. And that's kind of like a play on the words of like the Rum Diary by Hunter S. Thompson, who tried everything. So that's the whole reason I like to try different things, is I want to see what I like to do and what I don't like to do. And I like to see what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And if those circles meet where I like to do it and I'm good at it, then that's what I'll try to center more of my time in. So, you know, show vending, I liked being a show vendor, but I realized I just didn't have the salesman tactics. And I know you're like, oh, you know, it's so great that you're on camera a lot. My first 6 months on hobby Instagram, I didn't show my face at all. Zero. I didn't show it at all. Mm-hmm. And I just showed pictures, and then I started doing a little bit of video, and it got, the more you do it, you just get more natural and easier with it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when it comes to the podcast, like, I just like to ask questions to people. I'm curious. I like to learn about them. I want to learn from them. And so that's why I did the podcast. And, you know, when it comes to just kind of like content creation or the creativity, I just like to create. Like, I know some people say, oh, you know, these influencers, content creators, they're all like clout chasing. I mean, I feel like we're all chasing, like, you know, I think there are two reasons people make content. It's either for money or for ego. And I can thankfully say I'm not desperate for the money, and I need the money, and I'll do it for the money. Because some people do. They do. It's their full-time job. For me, I think it's okay to have an ego. I think anyone who creates content, if you don't have an ego and you're not looking at the numbers and you're not trying to figure out, you know, what value I can provide the audience, then you probably shouldn't be making content, because – like, you have to be comfortable with the sound of your voice, the way you look, right? You have to. Otherwise, you would just give up.
Yeah.
That's very true. And you have to learn how to deal with disappointments, or things are not growing as fast as you think. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing is the ideas and content creation, but it's also the persistency and stay the course and try different things and, like, upload videos nobody's watching and all of that stuff. I mean, that's what I think the young kids also need to understand. Like, it is work. At the end of the day, it's work.
Yes, it's called resiliency, and that's what I'm trying to teach my kids. I'm trying to teach, like I want to build my own resiliency up, too, because there are days when I'm like, this didn't do well, or I thought, you know, it's funny. Sometimes my best content is the stuff that I think very little of, and it's very quick for me to make. And then the stuff that I take a long time to produce or edit is stuff that doesn't do well. And I'm like, why am I wasting all my time doing the hard stuff when I can just kind of do the easier stuff? But I also want to try to do some more educational content and more kind of like content that kind of sticks to the collector's bone, because I'm not here to be a flipper. I'm not here to be a vendor. I'm not here to be a breaker. Like, I'm a collector and I'm a content creator. And if people say I'm an influencer, I think more like I like to inspire people. There's a lot of people in my local area and regional area who have felt inspired by my try everything attitude or strategy. And they've created podcasts. They've tried breaking. They've tried setting up at a table. And, you know, some of them like I'm very happy for them. Like, it's very flattering when people tell me that. And some people do that they don't want to, you know, it's weird. I don't want to get into a whole like clashes, but like, some people I've helped them and then they will just kind of like completely talk bad about me behind my back. And you know what? More power to them. Like, that's just how it goes sometimes in the hobby.
That's not just in the hobby, I think, because I think sometimes you have actually it's mentioned a bit about this, because I now get a book. It's in German now. It's called Subtile Kunst ist darauf scheißens. In English, it's called, the book is Subtile Art of Not Giving a And it's very good because it's because sometimes people feel what other think about me, and this book is a bit more doesn't care. Do what you want, and
Can I see that cover again, please?
Because it's from Mark Manson.
Yeah, Mark Manson. Yeah, he also does. So it's so funny. As soon as I saw the color of the font and his name on the bottom, I missed what I wanted to see was that little asterisk or the covering.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to say it because I don't know how many kids watch, but I missed that in the beginning part. But as soon as I saw that font color and his name, I was like, I think that's the title. I think that's the book we're both thinking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's it's funny that. Yes, that the subtle art, absolutely.
Exactly. For these guys out there which don't know your channels now, like your YouTube podcast, what do they get? Is there a different strategy behind your podcast? You said something about you want to hear about collectors, like we do also a bit here in our podcast. Your YouTube is educational. Instagram is mix. Do you have a kind of what the people get on the channel?
I love that. You know, thank you for asking that question, because I don't think I made it very clear the first time I was talking, but there's different, and I know we're kind of getting into more content creation, and it's not just like cards and hobby, but that's kind of what I do, right?
Yeah.
There's two approaches I think you can take. One is called multi-channel, where you just cross post. You just, the same 30-second video is on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, and Facebook, and that's you just see what works, what doesn't. There's also another approach called omni-channel presence, and that's when you cater specific content to specific platforms because you know that that audience, it works with that audience. We know social media is very short attention span. You know, if you make a reel, if it's not under 90 seconds, first, it's not considered a reel, it's a post. And I've helped people understand that because they're like, oh, why does my video cut out? And, you know, I'll tell them, hey, it's because it's considered a post, not a reel. And so that's, even though it's a very minor difference, it you know, people, that's important to know. You know, Instagram is more video and picture heavy, not a lot of text. You know, you can put a little captions on the bottom. TikTok is even more fast. People scroll through. I mean, there's a, you know, I won't even get into it because I'm not a TikTok expert, but it's just so much more hyper short attention span. And you just have to do like these edits that are just very like it's almost like disorienting because it's made for like younger generation. It really is. And then for podcasts, it's just long form. You know, you don't want a 90-second, 3-minute, 5-minute, 10-minute. Like, I love podcasts because you get to just sit and talk. It's like we're having a conversation, right? It's like we're having a cup of coffee or just having a fun time and just getting to know each other. So I love long form. I think some content creators can't do long form because they can't hold that attention. They can't really hold that kind of like platform, or they can't really bring a lot for a long extended period. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people who do long form who can't do short form because they can't get to the point and can't do it quick enough. So I like to really it's almost like exercising my brain. Again, this is all for fun. Like, I can tell you don't really monetize on Instagram. You can monetize on TikTok. You can monetize on YouTube Shorts. But Instagram really has been just so much fun. And, you know, it is like these are vanity metrics, like, you know, the likes and the follows. But recently I've been talking about how shares and saves are really important for a content creator on Instagram because that shows true engagement. So what I like to do in my long form is just really, you know, get deep, and I like to sometimes be funny, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not, but in Instagram I'm also it's not just always fun, because again, like when you have trolls come after you or people are trying to do some bad things to you, I kind of also show that side of me, because that it is like, again, I don't have a personal account. That's my social media. That's my digital presence, is my Denny cards. And I show my whole self, like the good, bad, and the ugly. And I like doing that in a short form as well in Instagram.
Nice. Yeah. You will link everything in the show notes.
Yeah.
Dennis.
We need an extra page for all of his links.
Oh my gosh.
For,
yeah.
for the show notes. We need to ask Spotify first if we can get more space.
Oh my gosh. So,
but in your list, in your Instagram bio, it also says writer.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I did write. So
tell us.
There are two publications. One was called Basketball Card Fanatic, and the Real 27 guy, Adam Gray, wonderful, wonderful person. Mm. My biggest, most important lane of collecting to me, I have cards back here. Like, most of them were basketball, and so it's basketball cards. So I wrote an article about kind of like a time when I was trying to win an eBay auction for a Larry Bird card. Like, my son loves the Celtics and Larry Bird and Jason Tatum, and so, you know, I was kind of like, you know, going through that. It was like a in the moment type of article, just talking about how, you know, what card collecting meant for me and the relationship between, you know, like father, son, and that things like that. Because a lot of people who collect, it's because it was passed down generationally. For me, it wasn't so much, but, you know, that's something I'll talk about maybe another time, because I don't know if I'm ready. It'll just be too long. Mm-hmm. But I wrote another article about Dennis Rodman. He came to the Chantilly show, and as I'm literally trading for one of his cards in a trade night at the hotel conference, the lobby, he's walking like 10 feet away from me from the concierge desk to his car outside. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I was like, I have to get this card now. I have to get it in trade night. It was a upper deck. It was not licensed. It was like, you know, it was after they lost license, so it was like 2010 Upper Deck Exquisite, but it was a piece of his sneaker, mm-hmm. and with an auto, and I'm like, oh, like, I gotta get it. And then it's funny because my trading partner's like, well, now the price went up. So, but I wrote an article about that, but it didn't get published because, unfortunately, Basketball Card Fanatic is now has said goodbye to the publication. The other place that I did write for briefly was actually this time last year. So, what are they called? Hobby News Daily is an online, and they asked me to come on to their writing, group of writers. It was a team, and, that was, it was fun for a little bit, but I just wasn't able to sustain it because I have so many things going on. But there are also some other things within the group that I was just like, you know, I think I kind of like, if I'm going to write, I will write for myself. I will write in my Instagram captions. I think a lot of us, you know, whether it is in German or English or Korean, you have that space underneath your video or picture where you can just write. And, you know, if my Instagram posts are getting like 100,000 views, then that's getting much more eyeballs than, you know, than like a website that I write for like once a month. So, So I appreciate all the opportunities I get, but I also have to try to like learn who to work with and who not to work with and things like that too.
Yeah. Nice. Do we come a bit about you? You mentioned a few of your cards. Now you said 90s basketball, New York Knicks. Yes. Is this your collection, or how do your collection look like?
So I want to say, like, when I look at the cards here, I got some of those rare 90s Jordan inserts. You know, I got some Beam teams. I guess it's been a year, but I don't know. Is this a type of podcast where people, because I know it's from at least from Das Hobby, it's better for me to explain it than show you on camera, right? Because
we
it's audio.
We have both. We have
audio. Oh, you have both. Yeah. Oh, the only link that I got was audio only, but you know, I should have had him ready, but oh, you know what? This is, I know he's,
Uh-oh.
I promise this was not planned. This is it, on my wall. This is one of my favorite cards. It's, Rick Smith's Skybox Autographics. So it's the black ink, which Dunking. Is, I think, the less rare one. Yep. The Dunkin' Dutchman.
The Dunkin' Dutchman.
Yep. 1998 Skybox Premium. Nice. Let me
that
pull
was
up.
A good team, man. The 1998 Indiana. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Very good team.
Pacers versus Knicks. I mean, that was classic. See, I know everyone, like, basketball right now, NBA, it's all three-pointers or dunks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you had some battles. You had great defense. Like, I'm more of a defensive player guy when I play basketball, when I used to play, because now my body's, like, betraying me. But I love good defense. Smits and Ewing went at each other. Yeah. Miller, Starks, Charles Oakley, the Davis brothers. That's yes. my NBA. You know, I love that NBA.
Dennis so as I, well. Dennis yeah. is also
nice. It was my time too.
Yeah.
That was my time too. Like, so, the Pacers were incredible. I mean, as a Bulls fan, threatening sometimes. Right. But
I mean, it was unbelievable how close the Pacers, I mean, think about all those Hall of Fame players who just could never win a ring because Jordan was so dominant. But, you know, it was just the wrong time, right? But, yeah, I love those battles so much. So I have, I don't want to, like, disconnect from the mic too much. Like, I have it all in a showcase, but I have another one. So I don't know how much you want to talk about grading, because I know, you know, PSA just, and Beckett have their, it's only a PSA 7, mm-hmm. but this is a Beam team. It's not the first one, but it is a 93 Beam team, so the second year where it's not numbered. I do see some whitening and all that, but to me, it's just like a really cool car to have. And like,
Beam team's nice.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
And Kendall Gill is on the car too.
Oh, number 13 yes. of the that's, it's a shadow. Yeah,
see, that's the nonsense that I have in my brain. I see
I love
that,
it.
And I remember that Kendall Gill was on the Charlotte Hornets. I have a problem. I have a mental problem, guys.
You have a mental problem. Yes. You and I both. We have mental yes. NBA problems. We live, yes, eat, yes. and breathe and basketball. So you're right. This is, you know how people say it's a shadow Jordan card because Jordan's in the background. Of like Sam Bowie. So this is a shadow Kendall Gill card. You're right. Yes. Thank you, Dennis. Yes. I love that. So yeah, I'll stop there for now because I don't want to like pull the whole showcase down. But yeah.
But this is your collection. So look like Jordan, New York Knicks. This is your collection.
So you know the Knicks, I don't have like big, I know there's some great John Starks collectors on Instagram. Mm. Not so much maybe like Ewing or like, I mean, I don't even know who the third would be, the third most collectible, maybe like, I was going to say either like Anthony Mason or Charles Oakley, but like, you know, I know after the Starks time, like, you know, you had Allen Houston and Marcus Camby, but Spirit. I didn't really, again, like Spearwell. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I wasn't like a big, even though I lived in New York, I wasn't like rooting for the hometown team. Like I was like, it's all about, you know, MJ, Pippen, Rodman, more so for me because I didn't start collecting until like 92, 93. So, you know, more so than like Grant, Pippen and Jordan. It was for me, it was like, you know, Dennis Rodman, like the crazy hair. You know, when you're a teenager, you're like, you know, wild as that, you know, bad as I want to be. Mike, you know, Dennis Rodman, like he's a bad boy, you know, like motorcycle, crazy hair, Madonna, like you know, if you're a rebellious youth, like that sings to you, right? Right, Dennis?
True. Yes. It's sad but true.
That's why I'm his fan too.
And it was interesting because you had no other player that was comparable. And he was still relevant. He was still playing good basketball. Mm-hmm. He was not just like a freak who couldn't play and was sitting on the bench all the time. So you had to take him seriously on the court too. So that combination was just impressive. And his life story, like I also read the book and there are some really interesting documentaries about that guy. Also like a very sad parts in his life that happened.
Like, I mean, yeah, he was like the janitor, right? And he went to community college. He had a bad, hard relationship with his father. I will say even in modern times, post-playing career, like, you know, I'm Korean-American, and he has all these, like, you know, like, I'm friends with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. It's like, it's very conflicting for me. But that's what I love is life isn't so cut and dry, black and white. There's so many shades of gray, and that's what makes it interesting and colorful. And so, you know, for me, I've definitely had I've grappled with my fandom of Dennis Rodman, but, you know, I know that like it means something to me though, for sure. Mm. Like, yeah.
Like Marcus means to me, same thing.
is there one card which you would highlight from your collection because you get this very special or it's, I don't know, it's a gift from a special person or... Is there one which you really can highlight from this, or is this? Yeah.
So, the go-to answer for me for a while when I've been a guest on other podcasts, and it's such a, to me at this point, it's such a cop-out because I've collected for so long, or I mean, I've collected for the past 3 years where I've had some cool cards and cards that do have some special meaning, like that Rodman card that I was talking about. That's probably one of the best stories, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember as a kid in my, you know, very, very small local card shop that was a block away from my neighborhood in Queens, New York. It was owned by a Korean lady who, you know, at that time, I didn't think that was like a strange thing or very different or unique. But now I recognize, wow, that's so unique to have a Korean lady be the LCS owner. But I would, you know, I would just buy packs, right? Like at that, you know, I think a lot of us, we remember, we didn't buy boxes and cases, we bought just packs. And I remember pulling in one of my packs after, like, you know, you're pulling, looking for Jordans, or you're like, you know, you hear about, oh, people pull like in Fleer Ultra, the Scoring Kings, and they look so good and all that stuff. And I just remember pulling my first ever and only time I ever pulled one, but it was the Scoring Kings, the first one, the original Scoring Kings with the lightning in the background. And I just remember that feeling. Like, I know this kid, this 11-year-old, pulled a Paul Skeens one of one, but I feel, I'm serious. Like, any kid pulling any PC player card in, you know, that hooks you. That really does. And so from that moment, I was like absolutely hooked. So, you know, for me, it brings back a special time and memory, like just feeling like I just won the lottery. You know, it's like at that time, I remember looking up at Beckett. It was like the low and the high prices. It was like 50 was the low, 100 was the high. The packs were like $1.25. But I remember thinking like that was the biggest card in the world to me. And, you know, at this point, it's not numbered. I'm sure the condition was bad. And so I guess I'm sorry I'm talking so much about the story, but I'm trying to give your readers like that, bring them into that.
It's important to
time.
Know. Yeah, of course.
I had that card I thought it was a forever card. I really did. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved from Florida, from New York to Florida as a teenager, due to family things, there was a kid who really like kept like almost pestering me about it, but then like would like offer his friendship to me and like, oh, like, you know, that's a great card, and hey, do you want to be friends and all that. And like in my like kind of like young stupidity was like, oh yeah, you know what, I'll give you the card. It was almost like in exchange for his friendship. And then after I gave him the card, he's, oh, thank you, this is so awesome. And then like a week later, like he pretended like he didn't even know me, right? It was like, gosh, he got what he wanted. So to me, that brings like memories of like joy and also like kind of like betrayal or sadness, you know. So mm-hmm. I feel like I should buy all the Scoring Kings in the world so I can get that one particular one back that I had. But I only still in my PC collection, I only have one because they are like so expensive, and I'm glad right now to just have one. But it is, I didn't show it to you, but it's up there. Mm-hmm. But it is like a PSA 7, you know, original Scoring Kings. And so that's, I hope I answered your question well enough for that.
Yeah,
that is maybe the most heartbreaking story I've heard so far on our podcast, to be honest. Like that, I mean, but honestly, Marcus, like that a kid said, like, tricks you with like, oh, friendship, and then you give the kid the card.
That's
and
true.
Then he's like, okay, bye. That's,
yeah, I feel like there's a lot of us who have stories like that. Whether it's like an unfair trade or some sort of like influence. And that's why it is important to kind of like have, well, nowadays these kids are so savvy and they have better cards than a lot of us do, right? They just have like, you know, $100,000 in their cases of Zions. But, you know, there are still some kids out there who are just like getting tricked, or, you know, there's an imbalance in power between a young kid talking to like an older adult dealer. And so, but I also know that, like, you know, you can't, you know, sometimes you have to learn the hard way too.
Yeah.
That's how I learned too, when I met Marcus. It was the hard way.
It's the hard way, of course. Yeah.
It's the hard way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things happening in the hobby as well. So there's a lot of shifting of licensing and, Yeah, some rumors in the hobby about the debut patches of Skeen. And there's a lot of rumors and something has happened. How do you see the hobby today compared to the past? And how do you see the hobby in the next years? How does it change? Is there something what you would mention?
Yeah, I mean, I, again, when I think back to the time when I was part of the hobby community as a kid, it was really just local. There was not even, like, I didn't know about card shows as a kid. There was definitely no grading. As a young adult in the late 2000s and early 2010s, again, there was Facebook, but I probably did more like blogging. Like, I remember like writing about my cards, or like I was on sports card forum, like, you know, these layout forums and all those type of things. There was a little bit of community, but there was no, like, you know, I remember, you know, having someone rip a pack for me on YouTube, Cards Infinity, and it was like gold standard. It was like 2010, 2011, or 2011, 2012 gold standard. And he ripped it for me, but it wasn't live. It was like recorded. And it was funny because I went to visit the shop, so he did it in front of me, but I just wanted him to record it, put it up on YouTube. I thought that was the coolest thing. Chris Justice with Cards Infinity. But there was no community, and there was such little social media. And now social media dictates the narrative in the hobby or any industry, where, you know, you see people with extensive social media departments to counteract bad publicity, right? I don't feel like that happened. Like, Fanatics and Topps, they have so much money, but like, yes, they have social media presences, but you don't see them trying to mitigate PR damage like you see Wendy's or Burger King, or, you know, like, you know, you have these big companies who are actually like trying to do customer relations on the fly, and you don't see that. I kind of see it with PSA, with Nat Turner. He's very good at responding. People be like, hey, why don't you DM me, why don't you talk to me, and I'll see how I can help. That's great, that's excellent for that he does that. But for the largest company in our space to not have that is kind of strange to me. So I think I could see that maybe changing a little bit, because at the end of the day, it's customer service for these businesses. And yes, if there's only one place to get cards, we have no choice. But guess what? People, their choice will be not to go to Panini, but it'll be, I'm leaving the hobby. And that's what I think a lot of us would be sad to see, because we want to have more people to collect with or sell to or buy from. And so I think I could see that trend. I hope that with more international presence, PSA and Beckett being in Germany, like, understanding, look, we need to serve the hobby, like, as a whole, as opposed to just being like, it's all about the money.
Yeah. Actually, it's matching, because I get also the feedback, if you have something you want to ask one of the big companies for cards, it's impossible to get there any feedback. Send them a mail, you're waiting, or you get in contact with them. The only way to get in contact is very good at card shows here in Germany. That's very good, because then Topps
and cannot escape.
They're right in front of you.
And of course you know the guys then, and then you get in contact. Of course then the German Topps, let's say it, or German Panini is then not the one, because they also a bit depend on the US ones. So they of course said, we know it, but we can't solve it in some things.
I see, but I don't like that when people kind of pass, you know, they're kind of like kicking the can down the road, or like, oh, we can't do it. You gotta, you know, we've all called customer service. I'm sure it's like in Germany too, right? You call someone, you get a live person, and then they're like, let me transfer you. It's like, and then that person says, let me transfer you. And then that person says, let me transfer you. You don't want that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's actually, that is the harsh reality. And I know it from other areas of business too. If the mother company, like, usually if it's, I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but if it's a US company, they're like, oh, we make the rules. Like, everybody has to follow us, and you little Germans, you have no say. So this is how it started over here, really. I think over time, it got better, like for German Panini, for German Topps and everything. But I remember in the beginning, and Marcus, you do too, It was hard for those German guys to get any access to anything. The good thing for Tops, for example, was that football slash soccer is so big and Bundesliga is a thing. So the Americans had to deal with them. So, but like for NBA, tough.
Yeah, I actually looked at the list. I mean, you know, I know about the Wagner, you know, Franz Wagner. I'm sorry that, you know, he got injured. And I did have a great card that I did, you know, sell to Rickman Rips. It was like a laundry tag, Nike swoosh, one of one Franz Wagner from Eminence. And so, like, I know that, again, like, you know, like Koreans have no one in the NBA. We did a long time ago, or like a couple of people. Like Ha Sung-jin, but you get so much national pride, right? So like you're so proud. Like there's, you know, there's someone who looks like me or someone from my country in the greatest stage. You know, and that's why even though he's not Korean, like, you know, the whole Jeremy Lin, like he was like Asian American, not just Yao Ming Asian, like from overseas. Like he grew up in California, and so that, you know, he was Asian American. So I really like those type of, you know, it's funny. Yeah, I could have said one of the, I don't have a strong Jeremy Lin collection, but, you know, there's this one autograph that I got where I'm just like, this is, you know, he's in a Knicks uniform. It's, but I want to get like a Knicks uniform on card auto, but apparently those don't exist because during that run he didn't sign. But he, you know, you could find him with a Knicks uniform with sticker autos or on card on like the Warriors or the Rockets or the Nets or something like that. But no, I totally understand what you're saying, and I gotta say, yeah, I've talked to some of the folks from Germany, and I'm not gonna say it was one person. I actually heard it from multiple people, and I were getting a little gossipy rumor mill. But my understanding was that there was some pumping of like the Franz Wagner cards, you know, last year from influencers, and I think that's just so unfortunate because it's already so expensive to get product and cards shipped there, and to, you know, I don't know how the conversion rate works and all that, but I think that's really like messed up that people were doing that. Like that's so wrong of, like, you know, I don't know if I can say that person, but I don't want to get in trouble either.
Yeah, don't get trouble from us.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's not a good game when you pump up the prices. I think you have it in different players. Sometimes you hear about that. But yeah, Franz Wagner, of course, it's and Dennis Schröder. It was before Schröder, Franz Wagner, of course, and now it's more the Franz game. But now he's back. Oh, he's playing again. Yeah,
he came back from injury. I haven't recently seen the stat lines, but yes, right. It was a short term injury.
He came back and scored 25 points in a quarter, I think. Or
whoa.
A quarter and a half. Don't let me lie, but something like ridiculous. He's just like, okay, this is your first game back, my friend.
I love it.
Okay, good to
go. He's definitely in the running for All-Star for sure. Yeah. I mean, he's really good. I mean, I don't want to make people upset, but he might be better than Bencaro. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I don't know if you're aware, like on German television, there is a very nice documentary about the Wagner brothers right now. Oh. It's a four-part documentary, really close to them, and also this whole relationship between Mo and him, and like Mo struggling for a deal, and Franz getting this $220 million deal, but they're both on the same level. They're just brothers, just honest with each other. It's very well done. Like, I can only recommend it. It's really nice.
Is it only in German, or is it subtitled?
It's probably subtitled, but I'm sure that the NBA will make sure that it gets synchronized, translated.
Where is it? On which platform?
ZDF. 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 Yeah. But speaking of Germany, tell us a little more. Like you're also international. You have international audience, international buyers, and everything. So what is your experiences with us?
Oh, with Das Hobby?
With Germans.
With Germans. Germans. Okay, so first thing I gotta tell my eBay. Okay, and you know what? I am gonna say that person. Seblez, he was the one who was pumping Franz Wagner. That was so wrong of you. I just wanna say that because that is incorrect. Yes. You cannot do that. And I know that, well, I don't know that, but this is what was being discussed because people were so upset. Again, if you have a certain amount of trust that people have in you, you can't just mess it up by doing some sort of ridiculous pump and dump. I think it's great to pump cards, you know, talk about cards you love. But if the sole reason to talk about cards and you say you like them is so that you can inflate the price to sell eventually, to sell to someone, that's why people don't like influencers. So I just got to say that. I would encourage all of my fellow eBay sellers, whether you have a store subscription or user, just free account, to turn on international shipping, because it'll just get more eyes on people. The buyers know how to, whether to use Ship My Cards or vaulting, or, you know, like they're willing to pay for more international shipping. Like I remember I sold a Yao Ming card to China and they were willing to pay the $20 shipping. And, you know, like, I think it's good. Like, I know, I'll admit, when I first started selling on eBay, I didn't want to turn that on because I was like, I don't know what to do. But eBay does make it easy. Like the buyers understand, like, look, I know what to do, right? So, and they do, because you guys are so passionate. When it comes to my experience with German, like, I will say, you know, I don't talk about, like, my parents or family too much, but my mom actually did take German literature as her college major in Korea. Respect. In Korea.
Okay, wow.
And she, when it came time to pick a language in, like, middle school, the German was an option. You know, everyone wanted to do Spanish, everyone wanted to do Latin, and my mom was like, you know, I don't know if you would want to do it, but I took German. And, you know, when you're a kid, you want to please your parents. And I was like, yeah, I'll do German. So I took German 7th, 8th, 9th, and then I stopped, and then I picked it back up at college. I love German culture. I actually, again, I'm sharing more about my personal life than maybe what I want to.
If
but
you want
it's
to. The, like,
it's, yeah, yeah, it's yeah. Your, but right? It's the German podcast is... I help host, or I guess now I am the host, but we have a neighborhood Oktoberfest party, and I know, as someone
nice.
Who is, I've never been to Germany, but I know that Oktoberfest is celebrated in September, the end of September. So I remember the first time I took over, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do Oktoberfest. And I'm going to tell people it's like September 29th. And people are like, why are you doing September 9th? Why? That's not October. That's not Oktoberfest. I'm like, look. If you want to be authentic, if you want to celebrate it like authentically, we will do this in September. And so they're like, oh my gosh, like, you taught me something. I was like, that's great. You know, that's what the thing about culture, you teach and you learn and all that stuff. So I you know, I love Wiener Schnitzel. I mean, I you know, I love the Vittles and the you know, the Bier beer. You know, I love the culture. And you know, so it's always kind of like, I don't know, been around me or in me. The one thing I'll say, I gotta, you know, I'll give you guys a lot of credit as a country. But for me, I was like kind of heartbroken was, the 2000 World Cup. 2002 World Cup. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Where Korea and Japan were co-hosting. It was really Korea's World Cup. Let's be honest. But, Korea World Cup. And Germany won that year, but Germany beat Korea in the final four, I think, because then we lost to, I think, Portugal and then we got fourth place. But, like, Germany was dominant in that World Cup, and, you know, they knocked out the Cinderella story because, you know, Korea beat, like, Italy, you know, and all this amazing stuff. But that was a great World Cup.
Today it would be look different, I think.
Why do you say that?
Yeah, of course they are getting back on course, but the last years was not that successful in for Germany in soccer. So
well, it's kind of, I would probably, and I don't know the German you know, Bundesliga and the German national team as well as you gentlemen, but I imagine it's a lot like you know, I went to University of Florida for college, so like SEC football, Gators. Like, we have such a high standard that even just going to a bowl game is not enough. You got to go for the championship. So SEC football, everyone wants to win the whole national championship. So it's like, if you don't compete, then it's a lost season or it's terrible. But I think it's just because, yeah, having high standards for the fandom.
Yeah. Actually, it's sometimes also you have kind of the area of fans who are a bit more traditional, And they are really focusing on just the club. They don't to visit the national team because they don't can identify with them because of the marketing and what's happening in the last years. So, but there's a lot of, or not a lot, but there are some fans which really say, I don't want to do look national teams. I'm really just focusing on my local club here in Germany that you have as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with me.
But you and you never made it over here? You have an open invitation.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk anytime. About, I mean, can we talk about, you guys have not just the biggest hobby podcast in Germany, but you gentlemen also run the biggest card show. Is that right?
Marcus does.
I did the last 2 years. We make the biggest card show in Germany, in Frankfurt. Yes. And also the first time they were Golden, for example. So we were quite proud that we have international guests like Golden, which really get a lot of nice stuff and bring them to US, like Messi shoes and so, so some really cool stuff, which they bring from Germany to US. And we have two or three more different guests from the US. But this year, there's a much bigger show also in Düsseldorf. In when is it? June? I think June or July.
Called Card Madness.
And this is
that's hard with Fanatics Fest and National. But
it's. I think they already sold now 4,000 tickets now, and we sold also 4,000, but they are still in the pre-sale, so they think there will be 5,000 or 6,000.
How many vendor tables?
Well, I think overall 400, but I don't ask me if I'm wrong, but I think around 400 it could be.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I would love to come. I would love to. It's just National and Fanatics Fest is makes things really tough. But do you have a secondary show? Like, do you have other dates in the fall or winter? Like, because I if I could find a reason.
We have Oktoberfest. It's in September.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Hey, if you guys got I am surprised at myself for not having been to Germany yet in my life. I mean, my wife and I talked about it, and my mom, she, you know, much as she loves German culture, like, she's actually never been herself either. And so I feel like if it doesn't happen 2025, it has to happen 2026. Like, I need a reason to get over there. And I want to meet the German collectors. I want to, like, just experience German, like, culture and, like, eat all the good food, drink all the good drinks. And, like, I would love to see how I can make it happen.
I mean, there are more and more shows coming, actually. Like, some years ago, it was very, very little. Then a Munich show started, and then Frankfurt shows, and Düsseldorf, and now Hamburg has one, Berlin has one. So
I was going to ask about Berlin.
You find shows also at the end of the year, because Card Madness, for example, Marcus, last year was in December.
Exactly. Something. But now they really have a big location, and I just checked the date. It's the 4th, the 5th, and the 6th of July this year. That's it's the 2 days, and in Berlin it's now in March. But in September, actually, it's, we have in Hamburg, 13 and 14 September in Hamburg,
show. So you go to Hamburg,
that on my calendar.
Go to the show, and then you go to Munich, go to October.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it. So July, in America, it's 4th of July. So, we may have like family plans. So I may not be able to do that. And then you said October. What date was it?
I would send you the link to the show calendar because on my website there's all shows in Germany, some October also in too. Europe, like London is also
doable.
Written there.
It might be doable. I'm just saying, we're just talking here, but I love when it comes to trip planning. I just love the idea of the trip and all the planning around it, and then you get to enjoy it. But if I can make that work, like, oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
And when you make it over here, Europe is so easy to travel. Give Spain a visit, give Italy a visit.
No, like, why would I? No. Why would I travel to any other country than Germany? No, if I go to Germany, staying in Germany.
I just wanted to say hello to
I've done Eurorail.
Neighbors.
No, I've been to Italy. I've been to, for like our honeymoon, I've been to Italy. Nice. And I haven't been all over Europe or anything like that. Like, you know, I'm not that well traveled. A lot of my, you know, time, vacation time goes to like Korea or mm-hmm. like, you know, family in the US. But when it comes to my, I like how Dennis said when, not if. So when I come to Germany for the card show, I'm going to be in Germany. I'm going to enjoy the entire time in Germany, and I want to make some fun, you know, trades with collectors, and I'll try to, you know, smuggle in some sealed wax, you know, through customs to have, yeah, you know, just kind of like, cause I know it's how expensive it can be over there, but, no, I'm so excited. Like if there's some way we can make it happen, I would love that.
Yeah. We will stay in contact. You will share it on on your socials when you will come.
Yeah.
And I think we will manage it. Thank you very much, Danny. Very, very interesting. Thank you for your time and to share your history in the hobby and what are doing and what are your ideas. And thank you very much.
Yeah, no, Denny Cards on all platforms. Again, TikTok is probably the smallest right now, and no one does threads. Oh, I don't do Twitter X either. So it's really like Instagram is the biggest presence. And I hope you know, sometimes I do some weird, not funny stuff, but for the most part, I try to have fun with it. Then YouTube, I would love if your viewers and listeners could follow me on YouTube. I don't know how it works with like maybe like the German translated stuff, like the subtitles. But if you are able to listen to or watch my content, I do card show vlogs. You know, I do a bunch of stuff. Like I'm always changing up my content, but right now I'm having some fun with GameStop. And, you know, I talked about C-Blez earlier, but the whole Jared Blez with the debut patch, like... These people who are trying to protect defend the company to, you know, to gain favor. It's just, I think it's just a little bit too much. And I think a lot of people see through that nonsense. So, you know, if you could follow me on YouTube, Instagram, I mean, I would be forever grateful. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Those were wonderful words. But I think that the closing words, I don't want to put you on the spot here. You have to say something in German to lead us out of this. Podcast.
Oh, you mean auf Wiedersehen? Like just something as simple as that? Or, of course.
Something like that. Anything else than auf Wiedersehen?
You can the Gebert stuff. Yeah, so I was going to say, you know, nach schnell. Let me see. Guten Tag.
Wonderful.
Wie geht's is what's up, right? I remember that from German class. Wie geht's. I should have started with wie geht's.
So nice. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much.
No, you guys are excellent. And thank you. I would love to have you guys on my podcast too to just talk about the international scene. But you know, thank you for everything you do for your German hobby community. You guys are just, again, if you guys have podcasts and show and all that stuff, like you guys are doing the Hobby S. Thompson thing too, which is, you know, just do a lot of things you like to do to serve for in the service of others.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. See you in Germany. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Every Friday night when the sun goes down low, Marcus and Dennis got a show to bestow on trading cards and things from the past. Collectibles that are built to last. From baseball rookies to rare comic books, memorabilia that grabs your heart's hooks. Tune in anywhere, it's easy to find a podcast for the collector's mind. Das Hobby, where treasures unfold. Every Friday, stories are told. Marcus and Dennis, guiding the way on this golden show, week by week, come what may. From cards and coins to signed guitars, history in your hand, it's never far. Listen in and join the ride. Das Hobby, where passions collide. They talk the legends and they share the dreams of finding rare gems that make you beam. From platforms galore, they reach your ear. A collector's haven, it's crystal clear. Das Hobby, where treasures unfold. Every Friday, stories are told. Marcus and Dennis, guiding the way on this golden show, week by week, come what may. Das Hobby, where treasures unfold. Every Friday, stories are told. Marcus and Dennis, guiding the way on this golden show, week by week, come what may.